I'm one, and I'm going to talk about pathognomology, and hopefully eventually get to concrete biology. First of all, I wanted to start out, for those of us that haven't really had any familiarity with pathognomology, with like the idea behind it. So, generally, if somebody asks me, well, what is pathognomology, and I have to answer in like one sentence, I would say that it's the idea of studying generally topological spaces, but we're going to focus on smooth manifolds. And specifically, we do this by studying maps from your manifold into some sort of algebraic structure. And in this context, it'll usually be a ring. And for this talk, we'll probably just focus on R for like 98% of the time. So, how does this tell us anything about topological information, right? So, as a sort of motivational example, say you wanted to know how many connected components a manifold had, which is like the sort of easiest thing you could ask about a manifold. So there's essentially two ways to try to solve this, and the first, more straightforward way is to look at just paths in your manifold, right? So you study smooth embeddings of the interval into your manifold, and specifically you want to study the homotopy classes of these guys. So you want to study them up to deformation, and the picture behind that is if you have your manifold over here and it's connected, then basically any two paths here can be deformed into one another. But if you have another component over here, then you can't really pass through this voyager to connect the path. So that's pretty simple. Another way, a little bit less intuitively, is to use this idea and instead look at maps from X into, say, the real numbers. And again, we're going to look at specific classes of these, really just locally constant ones. And so, how does that tell us anything? Well, again, picture here. Can you guys see that? Or is this in the way?
Yeah.
So, here's X, real line, and zero here. So, say I have a point somewhere mapping to zero. This locally constant condition then tells me that on some open set here, every single point in here is going to map into zero. And so, it's everything in this open set mapping to zero. And the idea is if your manifold is connected, then you can essentially connect any two points by such open sets in a way that basically your entire component has to be mapped into a constant. So in this way, you get that if your manifold is connected, then the classes of locally constant functions is just going to be isomorphic to R, because you just have to choose a constant to send to. And if you have multiple components, you basically choose where to send each component. So that gives you a way to count the number of connected components. And so the idea behind Durand cohomology, which is what we're going to talk about right now, is to generalize this to higher dimensions, so we can say a little bit more things such as this. So the tools that we need to get us there called differential forms. So these are basically going to be just objects that are generalizations of the things we integrate in our end. So in order to sort of try to connect with that, we're going to start with just considering the situation in our end. So in this context, we have these sort of God-given coordinate functions on it. And from these, we're gonna look at an algebra, which I'll denote by omega star. So it's just going to be generated by these formal elements, dx1, dxn, over r, modulo this relation. And so what this tells you down here is that, well, first of all, what this is up here is just you take essentially polynomials in these variables and coefficients in R. And what this tells you down here is that this any element that looks like this is going to be equal to zero. So this is going to give you an anti-commutative property, which in the context of differential forms, people usually just call this commutative because it's kind of what you want when you talk about differential forms. So, but I'll just call it anti-commutative because it's more natural that way if you don't know about differential forms. So, so far this is just completely arbitrary object. But yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, that's just the exterior algebra, right?
Yeah. I just didn't want to really say that. But yeah, this is just the exterior algebra.
The exterior algebra already generated by the coefficient of
R? Yeah. Well, actually, it's not even that yet. What it's going to become that at this point when we talk about this guy. So omega star n is just going to be the tensor product of infinity functions on this guy with this algebra that we created. And this is called the space of smooth forms. And so this is going to be the object that we're going to be primarily interested in for the rest of this talk. And so I kind of want to take some time to wrap our heads around what exactly lives in here, what things look like. So to do that, actually, first of all, I want to say that I want to point out that you can actually decompose this naturally into a direct sum, which I'll write as equals 0 to n of where this delta q omega q rn is going to be the tensor product of c infinity functions on rn with what I'll call omega q, which will just be the subspace generated by q degree q monomials, essentially. So I'll just write that up here. So Q star is just going to be the R span of stuff that looks like dxiq of Q to dxi, dxi1 to dxiq. And if you really, because of this relation, we can sort of switch things around. So if you want this to sort of not repeat things in view basis, then you want to ask that these guys be in order from any decent order, really.
What do you mean by this?
So this guy over here starts off as a vector space over these. So the way we generate this algebra, I guess I wasn't clear too much about that, but you essentially take a vector space with these as your basis elements over R, and then you take its tensor algebra, which basically just means you introduce some sort of arbitrary multiplication between. So you just have vector spaces, and now on top of your vector space, you also have, you know, stuff that looks like this. And they don't really say what they are, they're just that, right? And so as a vector space, as a vector subspace, this guy is going to be spanned by the monomials of figure Q. Leave that up there. And instead, so to get a grasp of this, I want to look at the situation in R3. So what do these things look like in R3? We have four things to look at, right? Zero, omega zero, Rn, zero omega four, omega three, sorry. Then here you just have C infinity functions on R3, tensor omega zero, but omega zero is the span of zero domains, which is just R. So it's C infinity R3, tensor R, so it's just literally just C infinity functions in R3. So in this way, we recognize the space of zero forms as just smooth functions. And I guess I should mention that this is going to be called space of Q forms. And so that looks pretty simple. Next one, omega 1, is just going to be monomials of degree 1, right? So stuff in here is going to look like f1 dx plus f2 dy plus f3 dz, where I'm using the standard notation for R3 coordinates. And these guys are all just smooth functions on R3. And, right, so what do these objects in here look like to you? Is there any object that bears this resemblance to this?
No vectors.
Right, vectors, except these are functions here, so these are actually just vector fields, right? And we're going to have a similar result here for omega 2, R3. It's going to look a little different. So you're going to have f1 dx dy plus f2 dz dx plus f3 dy dz. Right? And again, it just looks like vector fields where these guys indicate here. Right, your directions, I guess you could say. So again, we have stuff that looks like just vector fields in R3. And lastly, omega 3 is just going to look like degree three things, but there's really only one basis element that's degree 3, that's just the x, dy, dz. And any permutation of those is just going to get you something with minus sign, plus or minus, because of this relation over here. So, again, we have something that really just depends on the function in front of it. So, this space, we can identify it just with some functions. So, it's interesting, we got really familiar objects from this sort of very arbitrary looking thing over here. And there's more to it. You actually have natural maps in between all of these guys that come from vector calculus. So, for example, if I want to get a vector field from a smooth function, I could just take its gradient. So let's get the same map from zero forms to the one forms, which is just the
gradient map
from North America. And similarly, you can get a vector field from a vector field by taking this curl. So you can take the curl to get a two form from a one form. And lastly, to get a smooth function from a vector field, we can do the divergence. So I'm just going to fill in some more maps here, trivial vector spaces, and again, we get from something pretty arbitrary looking, just a really natural sequence of spaces connected by very natural homomorphisms that we've all seen since vector calculus, right? And what's interesting about this sequence is that you can give all these maps sort of names now. So this one's going to be D negative 1. And the one coming from the nth space is going to be called Dn, essentially. So D0 is going to be the gradient, D1 the curl, D2 is going to be divergence, and D3 is just the zero map. And if we remember a little bit more from vector calculus, we know that the curl of any gradient is always going to be zero, right? So we have D0 composed of D1 and 0. Likewise, the divergence of any curl is going to be zero. So we have D2 composed of D1 is 0. And you have similar properties here at the end. It's just trivial because this is a zero map, so everything that goes to zero here is in the image. Right. So we have that this sort of property is satisfied at every single point in the sequence. And just to write it a little bit better over here, this says that the kernel of the nth map is going to be going to contain the image of the previous one. And this property makes the sequence into what's called a chain complex. And so this is actually where all cohomology and homology comes from. You get, you're interested in some object, so you study it by sort of getting some sort of algebraic structures from it. You construct a sequence and show that it's a chain complex. And that allows you to do the following, which is just define these groups by taking the kernel of one of the cubed map and combining out by the image here. And so this is going to be, it's called the homology of R3. And specifically, this is the Durand homology space for the kernel. So that's going to be the object we're going to be primarily interested in, just in a more general setting, which we can probably move on to now, unless there's questions. So far? Yeah.
Is the image considered from
Right. So that's the beauty of this, is that here we mentioned these were all vector spaces, right? So since they're vector spaces, they're the Abelian groups. So since they're Abelian groups, then you can modify any subgroup you So this is also part of what makes this whole thing work. You just had, I guess that when I was explaining in general, I just said algebraic structures in general, but you really want an abelian type of thing here, so you can do this. Any other questions? Quickly say something about what these groups actually are for R3. So H0 of R3. This guy we actually sort of already figured out over here, right? So it's the exact same thing because omega 0 is just smooth functions in R3. So the kernel of this map is going to be locally constant functions or constant functions in R3. So this is just going to be isomorphic to R. Again, because you just use a value to send a function to. Right? So these guys you can actually get from just more previous theorems that you get from vector calculus. So if you have something with zero curl, you can always make it the gradient of something. That's a fact that's used a lot, often everywhere in physics particularly. And we have a similar statement for divergence, right? You get the, let's say you get the magnetic potential, for example, in electrode statics and complex physics. So this stuff is just zero. And similarly at this point as well. But that's, I'm not sure if that's a little harder to show. But generally, the result for Rn is going to look like this. So HQ for Rn is going to be R in degree 0 and trivial everywhere else. And something sometimes called Poincaré-Lemma. And we'll hopefully see why later on. So now we can move on to the general setting. Now we're going to consider X to be a smooth manifold. And with that was taking off the alpha. And well, does anyone want like a sort of definition for this or a picture or reminder? Is everybody okay with the concept of a manifold? Okay.
Sorry, I have a question. So,
yeah.
I thought that because you get this chain complex, or this, I guess it's algebra, right? Like this thing forms the algebra, right? The differential forms.
Yeah.
And then I guess it's an induced multiplication on the homology, right? Is there induced multiplication on the homology?
Oh, yes, there is.
And is that the same thing as the kappa?
It is, actually. It turns out to be the same thing.
The wedge
product?
The cup.
What's the wedge? Well, wedge product is what you would call it in this setting. So
okay.
You usually write. So this is what I mean by this thing, this multiplication that
defined
over here. So in drum cohomology, you sort of take it to be a thing. And usually people write it as like a wedge, but I don't know what bother with that. So you're going to take X to be a smooth manifold, and we want to talk about differential forms on X, because really the reason why we define them in the first place is to be able to sort of carry these constructions in our end to your manifold. And what's nice about these things is these are the objects that we integrate in our end, right? So this is going to allow us to define integration in the manifolds. So just to give an idea of how we do that, basically, I'm going to define a key form on X to be just a collection of key forms. Impose an additional restriction that basically makes these guys patch together nicely on the manifold. So the picture you should have is like something like a sphere, and you have patches that look like Euclidean space, say like this top part over here and this little part of this here. And so you want to really say what happens in the middle, just as in the definition for these materializations. So what we do then is for any overlapping these sets in your cover, you want to look at the inclusions into each open set, and we're gonna require that any omega alpha in here, omega beta, and u beta, basically agree on this intersection. And the way we say that is that they pull back to the same form inside of the intersection. So this right here is what's called the pullback, and it's part of, it comes from the functor properties of these omegas. So what we did with these was we got them to take some sort of topological space and give us some sort of algebraic object, right? And so the idea is that these guys not only do that for us, but they also carry maps between topological spaces to maps between these algebras. So that's what these guys are. And really, you can just think about them as like being compositions. And that's exactly true for the case of zero forms. So if you just have a function, say, on u beta, so it's just some f, then the pullback of this function is by j is literally just going to be the composition. So from this function here, we compose it with j and get a function from the intersection into R. So this gives us a map from zero forms on u beta to zero forms on the intersection, and similarly here. And you can really just sort of extend that with the properties of the algebra of the differential forms. So just to make that concrete here. So your general form is just going to look something like some function times some monomial of these dx sets, right, inside one of these open sets. So, and by this index, I just mean some sort of collection of indices, right? So, this expression right now would be like dx1, dxi1, extend this pullback motion would be on F, just again compose, and then since these we took to be coordinate functions, you can kind of just say, well, I'm just going to compose each of these with this inclusion as well. And so you're going to get something like that. But we won't really worry about the specific definition of that.
So I was trying to write the diagram out. Is there like a nice universal property that you can represent that diagram as? Because I can't.
Which? This one?
Yeah.
Not really. Universal property?
Yeah.
I don't think so. This is really just saying that we want them to agree on the intersection.
There's a nice universal diagram.
Yeah, nothing's good.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's not really a way to say that this commutes because there's no, they don't end at the same spot.
Yeah.
Right. Is there still a question on that? Okay. So, that's what differential forms sort of look like in X, but for the most part, we don't really have to worry about this for the purposes of this talk, because we're just going to, when we do need to use them, usually just use local expressions in X. And this is what, for some reason. So now I want to generalize the maps we have here, the series, to differential forms on manifolds. And the name for that is, it's exterior differentiation, or just derivative. And going to look very familiar, so we'll start with zero forms where things look extra familiar. So zero forms are just functions. So the zero form on our manifold, we're going to define EF to just be the differential of this guy. So this is also an expression we've seen before. And calculus and other things. It's really just the gradient again when you look at just open sets, locally trivial sets. So once it's defined on zero forms, we can just sort of extend the idea similarly to what we did here. So if you just have omega being more general form, you define its differential to be the differential of the function coefficient here times this guy. So this guy is going to look something like this, and so you're just going to have your new coefficients are going to be its derivatives, and these guys are going to multiply and sort of rearrange that to get something similar to this again. And so similar to what we had before here, this guy we see takes, for example, zero forms to over here one form, and because this guy's expression is going to include one form, so it's going to take whatever degree form this was, and it's going to raise it by a little. So this exterior derivative is going to take q forms on x to q plus one forms on x. behind the same property, which you would like in order to even come up with this again. So we want the kernel of each one of these to contain the image of the previous one. And that's essentially already done for us. And we can see that just starting from here at the beginning. So you have some function, you take its differential. Now, what happens if I take its differential again? Well, that's just going to be you're going to be taking differential at exterior derivative of these guys, and so that's just going to be squared to zero. Again.
Yeah. So I'm thinking about this one specifically, and this is the easier route for my container. Is there like a geometric interpretation of the exterior derivative, or is this just like a kind of cheap agreement on the exterior output?
I don't know if there's a geometric interpretation of it. I'm not sure. No. If you mean, no, I'm not sure. This is actually really only defined. You really define it locally. Mm-hmm. So it's locally defined the same way as what we defined over here. Mm-hmm. So it's just going to be taking differentials, and essentially what's going to save it once we move to the entire manifold is the fact that this differential is going to commute with these pullback maps over here. Yeah. So you're going to get that the differentials on each of these open sets are going to agree on the overlap. And so it's going to... So that's usually an exercise left to those interested if they want to get a handle of more of this, so to show that this exterior differentiation as defined can lead to these pullback things that we defined over here. And that's the derivative. So with that defined, now move on to see how exactly we integrate these things. Before we do that, just put a word on how you actually compute this these homology groups. Well, I didn't really mention it, but before we left off here, I mentioned that these guys will also satisfy this property, so you get these homology groups for your manifold. And so to actually calculate these for something other than Rn, you usually need something that's called the Meyer-Viator sequence, which you're not really going to try to derive here, but I will sort of give the idea because it's going to be important a little bit later on. So the idea is that if you can decompose your space into the union of two things that you can calculate the cohomology for, then you can essentially just use the inclusion maps and their induced pullbacks to get this nice sequence.
Yeah.
you get this really long sequence starting from zero to the dimension of your manifold of first your space, then the direct sum of each of your subsets and their intersection. So essentially, if you know what's going on in each of those sets that you decompose it into and what's going on in their intersection, then you can find out stuff about X.
So if this is a convolution theory, like what is the intuition, like what's the